If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Progressives threaten Maine Senator Susan Collins into voting against Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court, but the effort may have backfired. Plus, Democratic chances of retaking the Senate overall rise as Trump's approval rating falls, and even Senator Ted Cruz of Texas has a tough race on his hands. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal here with my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's start with extraordinary effort aimed at Susan Collins of Maine that includes a crowdfunding exercise. It's already raised more than $1 million, saying, Senator Collins, if you vote no, we will not put this money on behalf of your opponent in 2020 when you're running for re-election. However, of course, the threat is that if you do vote to confirm Kavanaugh, all of this cash and more will go to your opponent. I can't remember such a raw exercise of threatening against a senator in return for a vote, Bill.
Well, look, I think it says a couple of things. One, it says that Mitch McConnell is doing an excellent job keeping his caucus together, which from the start has been the issue. He knew that if he could do that, the Democrats can fulminate, but they don't have much. The other thing is, if you're going to, Susan Collins calls this bribery, it's really more like extortion. And in some senses, it's not unusual. People are always threatened with the primary challenge, right, if they don't go along for a vote. But when you put it out this openly, you make it almost impossible for any respectable senator to take you up on it because it's such a public sellout, right? You would want to do this privately if you were going to do it. So I think it's just going to harden her harden her resolve. I don't think it's working.
There's some debate about whether something like this does qualify as a bribe, Kim, because obviously I certainly do. I think you do, too. We support the idea that you ought to be able to put your campaign money, which is a form of speech, behind or against any candidate, and votes are a big driver of that support or lack thereof. The problem here is that, or the potential danger zone here legally, is that the federal code defines bribery as the trading of a thing of value in return for an official act to corruptly influence a decision by a public official, including members of Congress. And in this case, they basically said, here, you will have this thing of value, which is we won't fund your opponent if you do this vote.
Well, correct. And that's what's so interesting about the way that this crowdfunding site actually was put together and phrased, because it actually makes it very clear what this quid pro quo would be. It actually says your card will only be charged if Senator Susan Collins votes for Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court. So in essence, yes, we will only put this money to your competitor. We will, if you don't go the way we want you to. So we will withhold funds from your opponent if you do what we say. It's not only just potentially bribery, but potentially extortion. And I think the thing that's notable here is not just that it's legally dubious that they did this, but politically dubious that they did it too, meaning it is unclear that this would ever have done anything but strengthened Susan Collins' resolve. Whatever you think of her politics, and there have been many, many years in which more hardcore conservatives have called her a rhino, complained that she's not tough enough on things, that she's not conservative enough. Susan Collins very much fits the state of Maine. She had an enormous amount of support in her last reelection. 2/3 of Maine voters voted for her. And one of the reasons that they like her is that she does have her issues and she calls her shots. She's very clear on where she stands. And she's not someone that really backs down on those, even in the face of enormous pressure. Again, sometimes much to her Republican colleagues' chagrin. So the left now trying this to pressure her, it would always seem to me likely that it would backfire. And indeed it has. She is nothing but defiant about this. And if she was already thinking of voting for Brett Kavanaugh, she's seemingly to be less likely to back away from that in the face of this.
Yeah, I would defer to Kim Strassel in expertise of the dark arts of extortion and bribery. But but I will say it seems to me that if you're going to do this, you want to do it in secret. It makes it almost impossible to carry out when you do it so publicly.
Because anybody
so
who's the target would look
right.
Right.
So right. Unprincipled. So it's not something I really understand. I mean, what I do understand it in the sense that the hearings produced nothing that they could use against Brett Kavanaugh. We have a little lull before a committee vote and then a floor vote. And I think they're just throwing things up. And they're finally realizing the problem is not a lack of Democratic no's, but so long as no Republican breaks from the fold, he's going to be confirmed.
Well, Susan Collins has not declared herself yet. Right. She's still saying she's making up her mind. And same with Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, another target of some harassment. So the game isn't over yet in terms of the vote, although each of them will probably make their declarations on the floor of the Senate when the Senate comes time to debate it. But right now, the odds are very high that she votes for Kavanaugh. All right, let's turn to the battle for the United States Senate in the November elections. And heretofore, it has seemed to be a very uphill battle for the Democrats to retake control. They have 49 seats with a couple of independents, Republicans of 51, but they're defending so many more seats, including 10 seats that are in states that Donald Trump won in 2016. And yet, when you look at the polls as this race gets down to November, a little less than two months left, what you're seeing is that the Democratic chances of regaining the Senate, while still maybe unlikely, still less than 50%, are increasing. That's because they have chances to pick up seats in Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, and even maybe Ted Cruz in Texas, while the seats that they're defending are all now neck and neck, North Dakota, Indiana, Missouri, and Florida seem to be the top four targets. And if anything, three of those four are basically a toss-up. And the fourth, Indiana, the Democrat has a comfortable lead, Kim.
Yep, and you're seeing that everywhere. You look in Ohio, that was a potential pickup for Republicans. Sherrod Brown is well ahead of the Republican opponent. Debbie Stabenow in Michigan, again, doing very well. Doesn't look as though the Republican they put up against her is going to have any possibility of taking over that seat. If you look at it, some of these polls in the Arizona Senate race, the Republican there, McSally, some of the recent polls that have come in have her ahead. This is for the seat for retiring Republican Senator Jeff Flake. So that is some good news for Republicans. But there are a lot of races, as you say, that shouldn't be close for the GOP, Tennessee in particular, and Texas. And the fact that the GOP is having – the Republican candidate is having this much trouble seems to be a reflection of a broader issue that could also be what's behind the Republicans potentially losing the House. And that in turn seems to be related to President Trump. If you look, his polls never tend to gyrate wildly, but just in the last 3 weeks, his average on Real Clear Politics for his approval rating is down 2.5 points. And you have some polls coming out this week that have seen it drop 5 or 6 points.
We're talking about the battle for control of the United States Senate in November, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Drive time, gym time, anytime. Podcasts from The Wall Street Journal. Check out all our shows at wsj.com/podcasts. That's wsj.com /podcasts. From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strasser. We're talking about the battle for the United States Senate, to control of that not-so-august body. But Kim, just to take off from your point, Trump's approval rating has, I think, really taken a hit here in the last few weeks. The generic ballot has also widened. The Real Clear Politics average of the poll question on which party you would like to control Congress, now 8.2% in favor of the Democrats. Bill, how do you explain the president's approval rating falling? I mean, because you know, for months he stayed pretty solid at 43, 44, something like that.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think possibly it's not spending enough time talking about the economy and so forth. I mean, it seems to me that what's been more constant is the high disapproval rating that he has from the American people. And I think that's going to be a factor even in these Trump states. That said, I'm a little skeptical about the polls. I think my gut tells me the Republicans will do okay. And a couple of reasons. One is 538 just carried a story
that website
on polling and noted that August polls, which most of these are, tend to be off like almost 10%, between 8 and 10% between the final margin and so forth. Also, I think each race is individual. You know, for all the talk about Ted Cruz, he's in a tight race. I think Mitch McConnell characterized the Republican races as a knife fight in an alleyway. That's not, you know, that's not very consoling for incumbents. But he's still ahead. I was surprised that I believe Dean Heller is still ahead by 1 point. And I thought he was the weakest candidate. And I see in my state, New Jersey, Bob Eugen has stayed on one issue, which is corruption. And I never thought I still think Menendez is going to win, but I never thought he'd be as vulnerable as he seems to be. And I think it's actually a pretty good strategy for the Republican just to talk about corruption. I don't know a single thing that he actually stands for in terms of policy.
Well, in Nevada, Heller, I've seen another poll that has Heller down one, but it is neck and neck. And that's the reality here, Kim. I think Arizona, neck and neck. Nevada, neck and neck. Tennessee, neck and neck. All three, if they went against the Republicans, would be losing seats. Then you look at the seats in North Dakota, Florida, Missouri, and to some extent, and all three of those, neck and neck. And no real clear advantage, all within the margin of error, no clear advantage for any candidate. And then you look at Braun in Indiana, Mike Braun, the challenger to Joe Donnelly. Donnelly has a somewhat wider lead there, and Ted Cruz has a somewhat wider lead over his Democratic challenger in Texas. So if you look at all, let's say take the six that are right now within the margin of error, three for each party holding those seats, we've seen from the past that when you get a direction in an election, they all tend to break the same way and can break the same way. And if those all break the same way, then the Democrats will run the House. I mean, run the Senate.
Yeah. And I think the thing, if I were Republicans, that would be most alarming to me is you mentioned those seats, and for instance, in North Dakota, Indiana, West Virginia. These are places where, I mean, look at North Dakota, where Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat, is up for reelection. This is a state that President Trump won with a 36-point margin over Hillary Clinton. Okay. And the guy who's running against Heidi Heitkamp, Kevin Cramer, he is the state's lone House member. He's been there since 2013. He has really pretty good name recognition. He's been an ally of Trump. But he can't necessarily get any headway here. And this is, you know, I mean, in a state, again, that ought to be easy for them to do. Now, granted, she has run a very clever race. She's positioned herself well on some issues, but they ought to be doing better. The same thing, you look at Missouri, Claire McCaskill. Trump won the state by 20 points. A very charismatic state attorney general, Josh Hawley, is running against her, one of the GOP's top recruits in 2018. He's put a lot of money in, and again, just not getting a lot of traction. And you see the same thing in Indiana. Indiana, West Virginia. Joe Manchin, I mean, West Virginia is a Trump state. But he continues to hold his lead over his GOP opponent, who, again, is State Attorney General Patrick Morrisey. So these are, to me, the indicators that would be most concerning if I were a Republican, is if you can't be kind of racking up some kind of margin in these places, then you've got to be wondering what's happened to all those Trump voters and what do you have to do to get them engaged?
Well, I think it speaks to Democratic enthusiasm versus maybe a dose of Republican complacency or perhaps in some precincts, urban, suburban precincts, a little bit of disappointment with President Trump's personal behavior. Those are issues. I think the other issues that have hurt the president, I think his over the summer, his Russian performance with Putin hurt. I also think the uproar over the detention, the separation of children and parents at the border has hurt quite a bit. And that continues to percolate in stories. I think there's a lot of Republicans who have been unhappy with that. And then the flaps over the op-ed and the criticized him internally in the Bob Woodward book. All of that stirs this sense that the Democrats want to create of turmoil in the White House and fuels their argument, which is we need a check on Donald Trump. We need to contain him, and we're the only people who can do it. I think that that argument that they will contain him is, frankly, implausible. I mean, they might impeach him, but other than that, they're not going to contain his behavior. They're not going to cause him to change his rhetoric at all. I think that that's and anything on some of the issues where I disagree with Trump, like trade, the Democrats might be worse than Republicans.
Yeah, I think it depends where you talk about where they might curtail them. They're not going to curtail his tweets or any of those things. They could curtail some policy if they have the House. You know, there'll be no permanent tax cuts and a lot of stuff that I would like won't happen. I think when the polls are this close in all these individual states, there's two things. One is it's going to be a very interesting election night because there will be some upsets, right? There'll be interesting outcomes in some of these states. But two, it makes both candidates very vulnerable to outside events. So if something happens, if the president has a very bad press conference again, like he did with Mr. Putin, or in Syria, or we learn that in North Korea, they're proceeding apace to their body. There's a lot of things you can speculate that could tip the balance one way or the other when it's, you know, when it's a 2 or 3 point race.
Regarding Ted Cruz, he's an interesting case, Kim. The current governor running for re-election, Greg Abbott, he's comfortably ahead. It should be an easy win for him. Also, you're going to see, I think, most of the House members in Texas seem safe. They're not the contested races there as in some other places. And the Republican control of the Assembly and the state Senate seems also not to be an issue. So why is Ted Cruz under so much pressure?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I mean, first of all of those numbers and races that you just cite does go to undercut some of these Democratic claims that they are about to turn Texas blue. Texas remains very much a red state. But you have to remember, I mean, Cruz has had, he's managed to alienate a significant number of different groups that ought to be his natural allies over the course of his short time in the Senate. Went on a campaign his first years to sort of dismiss and make enemies with everyone he branded an, quote, establishment Republican. Many of those people are very important when it comes to giving money and running reelection campaigns. But don't forget, too, his performance in 2016 in which he criticized President Trump nomination convention, which really upset a lot of Trump voters that he needs to turn out for this race as well, too. He's also running against a fairly charismatic opponent, Beto O'Rourke. I think those are part of it. This is about in a election. Everyone keeps telling me that this is about getting Republicans to turn out to match that Democratic enthusiasm. And I think Cruz's big issue at the moment is just getting that enthusiasm behind him.
So likability or lack thereof is an issue with Mr. Cruz, Bill.
Yeah, and who would have predicted 2 years ago that Ted Cruz's fate as a senator may come down to the rally that I think Donald Trump just announced in October, one way or the other, that he's now looking to Donald Trump to bail him out in his race. I mean, that's a lot of these are so close and they could go different ways. I will say, again, stories are always about Democrats take. I remember Wendy Davis when, you know, she was hailed as the next Texan, you know, in office. And the Democrats benefit because they get a lot of free publicity from a sympathetic media.
Well, Kim, just to buttress that point, I mean, the Democrats are always on the cusp of a victory, whether they win or not. But the point to Bill, I would say, is sometimes they do win, even though the press always predicts that they will always win. Sometimes they actually do. And I think for Republicans to say, well, the polls were all wrong in 2016 and the media predicted doom in 2016 does not mean that they will be wrong this time.
Yeah, I think Mitch McConnell made that message very clear. I think part of what he did when he described it as this knife fight, all these races, he's trying to dispel any thoughts of complacency among his incumbents.
Well, to that point, you know, you had Senator John Cornyn, who is the Senate Majority Whip. He said with regard to the Texas race, and he is the other Texas senator, he said, we're not bluffing. This is real. It's very serious. And I think that this is part of Cruz's problem as well, too, which is that donors in the GOP, whether you like Ted Cruz or you don't, you just don't think of Texas as a place where you need to be worried about. You're looking at North Dakota. You're looking at Missouri. You're looking at a place like Arizona and Nevada, places that are supposed to be a lot closer. And if you have to make decisions about where you place your bets, you put it there. And so Cruz is behind, very far behind in fundraising strategy, ad campaigns, because this kind of took everybody unaware. And that has been one of the issues, too. And it now gets even harder because in a race that there's a lot of money pouring in on both sides and there are these big bets, he's coming late to the game and having to go to donors that may have already spent money elsewhere.
Yeah, I talked to Senator Cruz in March, early March, and he was already expressing real concern about his race. You never know how much to take that because how serious to take that because all these senators want you to, not me, but they want to raise money for people and show that they're trying to do that. You have to show it's a competitive race. But it's going to be fascinating to watch. All right, Kim, Bill, thank you. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.